You are in tune to the Mindful Podcast by Coach Joaquin. Episode number 6 of the Mind Fuel Podcast. I got to stand with JD Denton, and I thought this was going to be a great lesson in running shoes and a history lesson in what it means to be an independent store owner for over 20 years. But what I walked away with was getting so much more. JD and his wife Chris own and operate Fleet Feet Davis, a running specialty shoe store. And I remember going to that store to pick up my first pair of running shoes early in my running career, and eventually working alongside with JD and Chris for a short time. And I learned so much about customer service and biomechanics and just how dynamic people and running shoes are and what it means to match them up. The value of investing and being involved in the community is the true essence of why shopping and supporting local is so much more than just keeping dollars local and in the community, as JD will point out in this interview. But Fleet Feet Davis has definitely a unique approach when it comes to customer service and satisfaction, which I'll paraphrase JD. If you didn't make it to the finish line or enjoy your run, we didn't do our job. And he goes into a little bit of that, of what that means, of how to deliver and carry the relationship well beyond the interaction from when where they're at the store. And that kind of sums up how JD uses that idea as a life compass almost. If something begins to yield its fun and no longer serves, then move on. He was a writer for Running Times for 15 years and really took on a persona as the shoe guy, holding a captive audience in the running world, and just really enjoyed how seamless it was for him to just say, thanks for the fun times, but I'm done. I gotta move on now. I appreciate JD giving some great insight on some life lessons that I'll definitely carry with me, and some just fun conversations and times I've had working with him and reading a lot of his articles he has online. Episode 6, Mind Fuel, JD Denton, the Shoe Guy. Okay, so I'm here with JD Denton, the owner of Fleet Feet Sports in Davis for what I have, about 22 years now?
Coming up on 20 years as owner, 23 years in the store.
Wow, great, great. That's amazing. I was just seeing how it's flourished from when I remember when I was a little kid, just down the street, and seeing it grow to progress, and even learning a lot and working with you in the fitting process. Learned a lot about that and the biomechanics of how I've used that well into coaching and training athletes. So I appreciate that.
Sure.
I do that. Well, I always like the beginning of Fleet Feet and how it started in Sacramento.
Fleet Feet was the original store, opened in Sacramento in 1976. It was on J Street in Midtown Sacramento, and that original store is still there. It has since been moved about a block or so away into a much larger location, but it's still there and still thriving and doing well. It's owned by Pat and Jan Sweeney. They've owned it for about the last 18, 19 years. And after that store opened in 76, there was interest from people in other areas around Northern California. And the second store opened, I believe, in Chico. Shortly after that, Davis was either the third or the fourth store, and Davis opened in 1979. A fellow named Deming McLeese opened the store, and there have been five different owners of the business. My wife and I are the fifth owners. We've owned it longer than all the others combined, so we stuck with it for a while. But today, franchising company is located in North Carolina. They moved there from California a few years ago. And there are about 160 stores nationwide, the most recent one being here in California, opened last Friday in Modesto.
And they're all independently owned.
All independently, locally owned and operated.
I love that. It really feels like it gives a bigger community vibe. I'd appreciate it about Fleet Feet.
Well, if you're invested in the community and if you're part of the community, then the business can reflect what the community wants and needs. And You know, we believed in shopping local long before it was a slogan, but now more than ever, we believe in it. It
worked out pretty well for you guys then.
It has, yeah.
Now, what I'm curious about is why shoe stores for you?
Okay.
Coming from your background, you had other retail. What brought you to the world of running and saying, okay, let's do shoes now?
Well, I first started in retail management in 1975 and worked in the jeans business for a few years. And I enjoyed retail, but I started running for health and fitness during this time when I was about 30 years old. And I enjoyed it so much, I wanted to work in, that's about the time that running stores were coming into existence. And like Fleet Feet here in California, back east, Fidipides and Athletic Addict and a few of the other early running stores. And so I thought it'd be kind of neat to work in that industry and put together my two passions, which were retail management and running. So I ended up going to work in 1980 for a small sporting goods store in North Carolina. It was owned by a couple of friends of mine, and worked with them for 13 years and helped build up the running side of their general sporting goods business, and helped build their company to 10 stores before I left in 93 because I wanted to move to California and own my own Flea Feed store, and that opportunity had presented itself.
And I remember that first tour, it felt like relatively small, very much compared to what you have now in terms of the shoe space in the background.
Yep, it was. But that's where I developed a fit process for runners and back in the early 80s and learned a lot about fitting shoes on people. Yeah, so I've been matching shoes and runners since 1980.
Project. Wow. Probably going to take up 2/3.
That's awesome. Definitely want to hold the trophy on that one, I think.
Oh, I don't know about that. There are a lot of old guys in the industry that some are still around, others have retired and moved on, who have been at it longer than I have. So we knew we were on to something. We just didn't know how strong, especially running, would become during as it has here in the last few years.
Now, going to taking on the shoe guy and becoming the writer, it was just a phone call with
John Parker who wrote Once a Runner, the novel. Yeah. Well, actually, I started writing about shoes before that, back in the 80s when I was still back in North Carolina. A small regional publication opened up called Carolina Runner, and I got to know the couple who were publishing it. And they said, you know, it'd be kind of nice to have an article about shoes every month. Would you be willing to write it? And we'll give your business some advertising in exchange because we don't have any money. And I said, well, that sounds like fun. I'll do that. So I started writing for Carolina Runner and doing about 300 words a month. And people started reading it and calling me up and asking me questions and coming around and talking to me about shoes. And Carolina Runner expanded and bought a publication called Racing South, which is based down in Georgia, or actually in Florida. And they merged the two together and created a new publication called Racing South, or continues to exist, and actually it evolved into Running Journal. It covers all the southeastern states, and I wrote for them up until 93 when I left to move to California, and then the guys at the running schedule here in Northern California contacted me, and they were interested in having me write for them, so I started writing about shoes for them. I had no idea that John Parker, who was living in Florida at the time, still does part of the time, was reading Running Journal and reading my column, and he enjoyed it. And then when I met him in January of 94 at the Houston Tenneco Marathon Expo, we were having breakfast in the hotel coffee shop one morning, and he was talking about my writing and about shoes. And at the time, he was not working with Running Times. He was selling his books online and had a few other things going. But that's when he said, you know what you are? You're the shoe guy. And that's what I'm going to call you from now on, is the shoe guy, because you're the guy I go to have questions about shoes. And I forgot about it after that, but he didn't. And less than a year later, he went to work for Running Times as the associate publisher, and he called me up and said, we want you to write a column in our magazine. I said, wow, Running Times, that's pretty cool. You going to pay me real money? He says, yeah. I said, okay, good.
That helps.
And he said, we don't want you to review shoes or talk tech too much. We want you to just write about runners and their relationship with their shoes and their adventures in their shoes and how they feel about shoes and how they react to them and how shoes are important to a runner and, you know, have some fun with it. And so I said, okay. And I got back to him a few days later and I said, I've got a topic for my first column. He says, what's that? And I said, things about running shoes that piss me off. And he goes, we might need to rephrase that. Of course, this was 1995, and people were a little more sensitive, yeah, I guess, about that than they are now. So we did, and wrote my first column, which was published in January of 95. And I continued writing for the next 15 years for Running Times. Did 150 columns, and the last year I retired from doing that in 2010, and it was about 3 or 4 months before my final column, and the final column was due. They had a long lead time. So I called up the publisher and said, you know, I've just run out of things to talk about, and I think I'm done. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm done. And he said, well, we understand. He said, you make this next one your last if you'd like to do a farewell column. And I said, well, great, I'll do that. So I did. And I think January of 2010 was the last column, or might have been 2011, I'm not sure. Last column I wrote. And I don't regret leaving it at all. I enjoyed it while I did it, but it got to the point to where I was running out of things to talk about. And, you know, looking back, there are probably a lot of new things coming along that I could have addressed, but I felt like it was time for someone of the next generation to step up and handle those things. I think there are a lot of people out there writing blogs now that you can read online and expressing their own stories about running shoes and runners, and some great stuff out there, a ton of information. So that's how Shoe Guy evolved, and I thoroughly enjoyed doing it, but glad it's done.
I love how a small connection and just something small, like planting the seed of like, oh, I'll just write a 300-word column and see where this goes on a monthly basis, grew to what it is to you become branded as that. And people come just for that, for the store. What I'm curious about is so that conversation you had with yourself and being able to say, okay, I think I'm done. Was that just like, oh, something that just happened while you were taking a shower? Or was that like a long conversation? Like, okay, I need to put this down now.
Actually, it came to me when I was wrapping up the next to the last column and proofing it before I sent it in. And I remember thinking, you know, I don't really feel as good about this as I used to. And I think I'm tired of doing it, and I just don't know that yet. And I always thought the worst thing that could happen is somebody needs to retire. And they don't. Certain professional football players come to mind. you know, it's not necessarily a good thing. You know, when you figure out you've done your best and that your best stuff is behind you and you need to go on to new challenges, and you just have to make that decision and that commitment to yourself and do it.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well. In the column you wrote, I've always believed that if you're not having a good time doing what you do, you should be doing something else. Trust me, Issue Guy weren't so much fun, I'd have moved on a long ago. It's still fun, but I've just ran out of things to say. Fortunately, I figured that out before you did. And I think that's, it's not an easy conversation it seems to have by alone sometimes, but very definitely for looking for growth and looking to endeavor on new challenges. That's something that everyone needs to have at some point. And it's okay to do that.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize when it's time for you to move on from something or whatever the project may be. And it's important for you to understand that the torch needs to be passed, and that you did your bit and carried it for your distance, and now it's time to pass it on, let somebody else step in and do that. And I realize a lot of people have difficulty with that. I didn't really have difficulty with it, and because I was real proud of what I did. I felt good about it, and I wanted to leave it feeling good about it. So I did. And I've always had that philosophy all my life. If you're not having fun, you got to be doing something else. And I think it served me pretty well.
Well put. Now, reflecting on that first column, are the same things that still piss you off about Shoes still here today?
Pretty much. I don't remember all of them, but I do remember one of the big ones is, why are the shoelaces too long? So many running shoes, the shoelaces are like a foot longer than they need to be, and they drag behind the shoe, and they have to be double knotted, or you have to go buy another pair that's shorter so that they don't trip, you don't trip on them all the time. So shoelaces have always been kind of a big deal to me. For a while there, cord shoelaces were in vogue, and I thought these things suck because they don't stay tied. You know, they look pretty cool, but they don't stay tied. And sure enough, they didn't last long in running shoes, because if you don't stay tied, particularly when a world-class marathoner is wearing them in New York City and has to stop and tie his shoes three times and still wins a race. I forget the gentleman's name, but that was one of the experiences he had. I think it's time to not let fashion trump practicality.
That goes really well into understanding fashion and trends. I've seen just in the time I was in the store, it's right around the time the minimal or natural or barefoot running was really peaking. And I look back down at the wall, it's gone quite the other way with something like Hoka's coming out and this whole rolling thing. How does one figure out what they need or your thoughts on all these trends from minimal to the big chunky shoes, it seems like?
Well, I never was a big fan of minimal shoes for the majority of runners. And in fact, the last year I wrote Shoe Guy, I wrote a couple of columns that addressed the minimal thing before the minimal shoes became all the rage. Because the minimalist philosophy in runners who wear minimal shoes have been around forever. Pretty much all the shoes in the 70s were minimal. Thing was that the minimalists who figured out pretty early on that standard training shoes didn't work for them ended up buying racing flats to train in. And I learned that from them, from fitting a few of them in the 80s into shoes. I put them into standard shoes, and they'd come back and they say, these aren't working. They're mushy, they're heavy, they're stiff. I just need less shoe. And one was a good friend, a doctor who did a pretty good job of treating injured runners. He was also a pretty good runner himself. And his name was Bert Fields, Greensboro, North Carolina. And he, nice guy, good, efficient runner, not a big guy, but he trained in racing flats, did high mileage in racing flats, never got injured. So, you know, all of the things that the minimalists talk about are true, but they're true for, in my opinion, the minority of the population. The majority of us do need something that provides more protection, more support. And I never gave up on that philosophy, even though the minimalists were pretty vocal and outspoken, and I did get I did get a lot of hate mail, and some that was, you know, pleasantly critical, and others that made me want to look carefully for across the street. But
kind of intense there.
Well, sometimes when people are sitting at their computer and they're anonymous, they can be as aggressive as they wish. But I always felt like I was attacking minimalism, and I wasn't. I was just simply saying it didn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there is no one shoe or one type of shoe that works for everybody. So how do people need to figure that out? I think working with someone, like in a specialty running store, that's familiar with the product out there, mm-hmm. familiar with the mechanics of running and the stresses of running and the concerns that runners should have about their shoes, working with them to come to a joint decision about what would be the best shoe and for the given runner at the given time for the training he or she is doing. And there's no easy formula for it. You can't just plug it into an equation and do a series of yes-no questions to figure out what's going to work for you. There's going to be some experimentation, and there are going to be some shoes that work better for you than others. Now, we used to talk a lot about the pronation factor. That conversation is not nearly as prevalent now. More the concern is get shoes that fit your feet well, that feel comfortable and feel like they're working for you, mm-hmm. and they'll probably work out. If you have a lot of foot motion, you may or may not need a lot of stability in a shoe mm-hmm. to address that. Chances are you will, but you could be one of those people who break the rules. And so you just need to figure that out for yourself with the help of somebody who knows shoes. And don't worry about motion control versus lightweight flexible versus cushion. These things are not necessarily mutually exclusive.
I think that speaks really high value on what the fit process and what FleetFeet provides mm-hmm. and what I've learned of why, and you guys preach about this, just because the customer for however long it needs to, so they can find what works for them, which sometimes it'd be 30, 45 minutes. And I remember up to 3 hours one time of going through and finding what worked for an individual. What do you want people to know about the store and the importance of the fit process if someone with the Christmas season coming up or any season for that matter, and they're going to be embarking on getting ready for the first 5K, brand new to running, what does someone need to know or expect when they come to a specialty running store like yours?
Well, I think that the people come in with an open mind and with some old shoes in hand and are willing to embrace new ideas and go through a process. I think that it'll work well for most people because you're dealing face-to-face with a human being. You're not dealing with a website. Not that there's anything wrong with websites, but obviously, but you're dealing with someone who lives in the same area you live in. You know where they live. You know where they work. You see them out on the roads, and you're dealing with somebody whose business survival depends on your success as a runner. Mm. And so they have a vested interest in your success. And one of the things I tell people when they want to get into the specialty running business is the most important product that we produce here is success for the customer. It's not hitting a sales figure or hitting a certain level of business or, you know, it's really not financial. It's all about creating success for the customer. I tell them when you're working with someone who is training for a marathon, their goal is a finish line. That's your goal too. If they don't cross the finish line healthy and happy that they finished the marathon and thinking, I want to run another one, then you didn't do your job as well as you should have. If they don't make it to the finish line, it's their failure, it's your failure too. Mm-hmm. So having a passion for the customer's success is really the foundation of what we do. You don't get that online.
I feel that speaks highly of the store being around for so long, if that's the focus, not having a model or not having a certain figure to achieve, but rather the value connecting and delivering to another human.
Every running store owner I've talked to from across the country, both Fleet Feet stores and non-Fleet Feet stores, independents, and I know quite a few of them, the conversation is always about how the shoes work for somebody, mm-hmm. and always about runners and running. It's almost never about expansion and growth and hitting numbers and taking over markets. And, you know, there are lots of companies, retail companies out there that's their whole thing. With us, it's the customer. Whether you're one store or you have three running stores or more, it's got to come down to the success of the customer.
I think that application to apply to other stores would radically change a lot of things of how people operate with that. So that's awesome.
Well, I agree, but I'm not holding my breath.
There's that too, yeah. I can understand that one. Going a little more to our closing, what challenge do you look to conquer in the next 6 to 12 months, whether it be with your fitness or the store or just things that are just not on the horizon?
Well, I am 67 years old, and you know, it's not easy for an older guy to stay in shape. I had to give up running on the road a few years ago because my knees made that decision for me. And but I had a couple of really great decades of running. And I'm still able to work out, though. So I work out on an elliptical trainer, and I have an elliptical bicycle, and I work with a personal trainer once a week doing balance and core and stretching exercises. A young guy who really puts me through my paces. And so my personal goal is to continue to work hard to feel the best I've ever felt, because the older you get, the harder it is. So if you're 35 years old out there right now and running comfortably and having a great time and you're looking forward to tomorrow morning's 8-miler, enjoy it, because it won't always be there. Professionally, my goal is to ultimately find someone who wants to take over the store and buy it from my wife and me, and continue to grow the business. But before I do that, we have some challenging waters to navigate here in the specialty running business. It's been a tough year for specialty running nationwide. We're all having to deal with the fact that our consumer is evolving and changing, and that there are other sources that they have for the products that they want and need. And I don't consider the internet to be competition. I consider the internet to be opportunity. And that's why Fleet Feet has developed an e-commerce site that all Fleet Feet stores can participate in, that our customers can come in, and if they find a shoe they like but they don't like the color, we can pull out the iPad and show them two or three other colors, which they can select and enter the credit card information and be delivered to their house. So that's one of the challenges that especially running is having to deal with right now, is taking this very personal relationship we have with the customer and expanding our connection to our customers to an omni-channel type of relationship where they have access to us when they need us, when they want us, whether they're in the store or online or on their mobile. And we're all, I think, working toward that, but we've got a long way to go until we accomplish that. And so over the next 12 months, my challenge is to get better results out of my business, while not compromising the results that I deliver to our customers.
Well put. So with that, in your words, where does greatness begin for you?
I think greatness is an individual thing, and it begins with you're being satisfied that you're doing your absolute best, that you're leaving nothing out there. leaving nothing on the field, leaving nothing on the road, leaving nothing on the track. You did your absolute best. And if you come in first place, that's great. If you come in 10th place and that was your best, that's great. So I think greatness is something that you have to develop in your own mind about your own self. Let other people think what they will. Let them apply whatever standards they will. There's nothing, you can't control that. But if you want to feel like you're great at what you've done, then you need to get to the point to where you realize it was the best that you could do.
Appreciate that. Then our closing question, or last one. After being in the business for so long, what you've learned in working with jeans, working with shoes, being a writer, if you were to go back to take this moment, what you know now, and speak to maybe the 20-year-old version of yourself, what would you tell him?
Well, I would probably be tempted to say, don't change anything that you're going to do. Just keep doing it, because all the screw-ups you did, all the mistakes that you made led you to a really good place in about 30 years. But I think the thing that I had to learn that I think everybody should understand is that you, no matter what you do, you got to enjoy it, and you can't be afraid of failing. And I'm starting to hear that more and more. You know, the value of failure is incredible. Mm-hmm. Because you don't really know success until you've experienced failure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, failure is a great teacher, but success is proof that you've learned the lesson. So too often I think people are afraid they're going to do something wrong or make a bad decision. They're not willing to, you know, take the leap. And I think if you have faith in yourself and you believe in yourself, and if you're as good as you think you are at what you do, then don't be afraid of failure. Just plow ahead. If you fail, take a step back, reload, keep going.
Thank you, JD. Now, if anybody wants to reach out to you for shoes or just inquiry to say thank you, how should they reach you?
Through the website, FleetFeetDavis.com, FleetFeetSports.com. They can shop with Fleet Feet online if they wish. And if they would like to communicate with me personally, they can email me at shoeguy@FleetFeetDavis.com.
Wonderful. Thank you, JD.
Okay. Good talking to you, Joaquin.
Thank you, JD, and all the wonderful people at Fleet Feet Davis. I highly, highly recommend, if you're looking to get into running and need to start with some shoes, find a Fleet Feet near you, especially if you're in the Davis, California area. You can meet JD and all his awesome staff and just go through that infamous fit process. They stick with you to begin to end, and you're bound to find something that works for you and just feels good to be in the nice pair of running shoes that cooperates for sure. And if you're curious about JD's writings, they are archived and can be found on runnersworld.com. I'll have them in the show notes of this podcast so you can click and see what he's done in the past and 15 years of writing about shoes and just some really fun articles I enjoyed. It's December, and with the new year's coming up, if you want to make big changes in your training or looking to try a 5K or half marathon, jump on to CoachJoaquinTraining.com. I'm going to have a limited time December program offers, and you can select the challenge today. And if you want a later start date, whether it be later January, later February, to line up with whatever race you have on the calendar, that's definitely, definitely possible. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and rock on.